And ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Beginner's Mind series. I'm going to let you in on a little secret here. I was not formally trained in the art of public speaking. I learned on the job in the last 14 years, speaking on different stages across the world, presenting to multicultural audiences here in India, across the Middle East, across different parts of the world. And I was not formally trained to do that. I was driven by my desire to learn it. I was very passionate about what I had to say. I made a lot of mistakes along the way, and the intention today on today's episode, special episode, is to help you not make those mistakes, is to make your journey easier, your journey to become a more powerful, persuasive communicator and presenter. Our special guest today is Mr. Matt Abrahams, who's a passionate, collaborative, and innovative educator, author, podcast host, and a coach. He is a lecturer at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business, where he teaches two very popular classes in strategic communication and effective virtual presenting. He received Stanford GSB's Alumni Teaching Award in recognition of his valued services. In addition to his teaching, Matt is a much sought-after keynote speaker and communication consultant for Fortune 100 companies. His online talks garner millions of views online, millions of views. And I highly recommend you go check out those some of those videos, the TEDx talks, and a lot of other information that is available on YouTube from Matt. And he hosts the popular award-winning GSB podcast called Think Fast, Talk Smart. We would all love to do that. Think Fast, Talk Smart. Matt also curates the nofreakingspeaking.com website. He published his bestseller, which is now in his third edition, Speaking Up Without Freaking Out, which was written with an intention to help people present and communicate in a more confident, connected, and compelling manner. Prior to his teaching, Matt held senior leadership positions at several software companies. So for all of you young professionals out there who struggle with issues of finding your voice and, you know, presenting your views, you'll have lots to learn today. And where he created and ran global learning and development programs. Matt, you're welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Sumit. I am very, very excited to chat with you, and I look forward to a great conversation.
Well, thank you. No, I must say that it was at a very short notice that we reached out to you. And when you describe collaborative in your LinkedIn bio, you've actually walked the talk by saying yes instantly. My team and I were thinking out loud, Matt, when we saw that we did a Google search, a YouTube search, in fact, of communication skills. And there's three or four videos that rank out there, sort of the top four videos. Yours was out there with 25 million plus views. That's a lot. That's huge. 25 million plus views. Ours was somewhere behind, you know, close to you at around 14 million views for that one.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And I must say that was not intentional. That was accidental, that the success of that video. We did a series sometime back just to add value to the students in the vicinity where I live. I said, we'll do something called the Coach on Campus program. So what we did was, as a volunteer thing, was to just go to these universities and say, hey, you know, we want to do a Q&A with your students. If they would like to ask me questions, we'd just like to film it for our YouTube channel. And one of the questions happened to be on communication skills. There were several others about time management, about finding my mission, et cetera, et cetera. There were like 50 other questions. But somehow the algorithms loved this. Somehow the audiences loved it. And that single video has been a huge driver of growth unintentionally. On our channel. In fact, I described the story in one of the videos. It's called Unintentional Side Effects. the ability to, you know, when you experiment with something. So I'm an accidental, unintentional teacher of communication skills, but you've devoted your life to this subject in various positions now. And, you know, you have these courses and these books and these videos, and we'd love to hear from you today. And for my viewers, I just request you to do two or three things that I request you every single time. One is learn with an intention to teach. And second is engage in the learning activity. It's not a passive thing. Engage in the comment section. Ask us questions in the comments. Maybe type in your top takeaways in the comment section, as well as learn with the intention to teach. And finally, have an action plan with all the rich information that Matt is going to share with you here today. Matt, once again, thank you so much.
Thank you. And I love those three goals that you have for your listeners. Very critical, especially when it comes to communication. You don't learn communication by passively listening about it. You have to actively and actually participate in practice. And that's how it gets better.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'd like to dive straight into the subject matter for today's discussion. Effective communicators, great communicators, people that we look up to, you know, the charisma, the poise, the pauses, the modulation, et cetera, et cetera. Are these people, is this a natural inborn talent or are they made? So just like great leaders, are great communicators born or made? And if they are made, what sort of a process goes behind it?
Well, you have to know that I believe that it's made, given that I've taught for so many years and I provide resources to many people as a coach, as a mentor, as a teacher, etc. I certainly believe that all of us can hone and get better in our communication. The process is like learning anything. It takes three major steps. It's about reflection, repetition, and making sure that you get the right support and coaching that you need. So it starts with reflection. What is it that works? What works for you? What works for other people? Many of us communicate out of habit. And what we need to do is we need to really think about how can we improve and add more tools to our toolkit. And once we do that reflection, we then have to practice. That's like learning a musical instrument, learning a sport. You have to practice. And then you have time to get coaching and feedback from others. So it's repetition, reflection, and feedback that really lead to honing and further developing communication skills.
Okay, I like that part about reflection, and it also brings in that intentionality, as in with getting good at anything, you know, that it has to be. I usually joke about this with my audiences. I say, well, I'm a good fortune teller if you show me your list of priorities that you're currently working on, because your life is going to be a reflection of your current priorities. And if learning, the deliberate intention to improve your communication skills is one of your top priorities, you're going to find the wherewithal, the resources and everything required in order to do that. In fact, I think it might be important to mention here that the video that I was talking about earlier, our communication skills video that did really well, did not have much substance in it, Matt. As I watched it again, we did not have a lot of actual like stepwise breakdown, just like the one that you've given right now, a reflection, repetition, and third one was?
Feedback,
right. And so as I watch it again, I realize that because it was an impromptu Q&A session, it had more this motivation to learn and the commitment to learn than the actual substance in itself. And I think that's a great place to start for many people, you know, is that your desire to learn that subject, your intention to learn it. And then I think you fire up your brain, your different parts of your brain light up, and you know, you find the people, the videos, resources, courses, etc., and then it takes the commitment to follow through. I was going to ask, did you go through any formal public speaking training, or would you consider yourself a natural at it? And if yes, tell us what sort of training did you go through?
Well, I'm absolutely happy to answer your question. But before I do, I just want to echo what you said. It's all about intention. And then that intention leads to attention. It's about tenacity. It's about giving yourself some self-compassion and allowing yourself permission to take risks, try things, and practice. And that's how we get better at communication. Now, from my perspective, I certainly needed to learn to be a better communicator. I'm fortunate or unfortunate with my last name starting with AB. I was often asked to go first all through my schooling.
Right.
The teachers always go alphabetical order by last name. So I was often put on the spot throughout my early education. So I got used to being the person who had to be up there and going without the net. So some level of comfort developed from that, but then absolutely honing my skills. I like to tell my origin story. When I was a freshman in high school, I was told by my high school English teacher that I needed to go to some speech tournament simply because he heard me. I was the first one in our class to give our "What did you do to that summer" speech, which many teachers ask their students today. And he said, "You're pretty good at that. Go to this tournament this weekend." And as I was giving my speech, I had a horrific event happen. My speech was on martial arts, something that still to this day is very important to me. Mm-hmm. And in the first 10 seconds of a 10-minute speech, I ripped my pant during a karate kick to start.
Okay.
And from that moment on, I have focused on communication. I focused on how anxiety can cause us to make mistakes in our communication and then have to learn how to recover. So I certainly have spent a lot of time learning and encourage everybody else to take the time to learn to be better at their communication.
Now, that's a great example right there of something that that could have been like perceived as a major setback on your first ever or one of your big speaking gigs, and ended up that way. And I think it's how you perceive it in the end, right? We make these mistakes, we go through this. I love what I read on Facebook the other day: grow through what you go through. Right. And yeah, you've demonstrated that. In fact, we've all had, you know, tell us your in the comment section, guys, your biggest embarrassing moments in the business of public speaking in the comments. We'd love to hear about that. Mine was I got mic'd up and this mic had this wireless thing that I was wearing. It had a pretty good range. It was a huge conference center and I had to like do it maybe half an hour before. I left it on with all my personal side conversations, with my visit to the men's room, etc. And I walked in and the audience, they're all laughing. I said, wow, what a great crowd to work with here today. Little did I know that they've been eavesdropping on all my little, you know, side talk before I go on stage. So then I learned a very valuable lesson. Keep it switched off or on mute before you... before you actually launched it.
You certainly did. You certainly did. And we have all learned recently how technology can be befuddling and challenging in our communication. Uh-huh. You got that lesson early in life and clearly have learned how to master technology and communication based on the success of what you're doing now.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think a very valid, a very important learning takeaway also emerges here, that you are going to make mistakes, that you are going to do things that are not up to your usual standards. But I think what's important is to not take those experiences personally, to take it as a learning process. Till date, you know, I make mistakes and sometimes technology is evolving. We've had instances where, man, we worked very hard on, you know, mastering this entire digital presentation thing, you know, setting up the studio and learning all the technology that goes behind it. And one of my clients specifically wanted a presentation on Microsoft Teams. They said, okay, we don't use Zoom for security reasons. We use Teams. I said, fine.
Right.
And I use a software that uses a virtual camera, you know, so that entire thing. And we studied and we did so many test runs, et cetera, et cetera. Everything went fine. However, there came a software update. Teams had a software update the day before I am to present to this audience, which does not allow the use of virtual cameras anymore. Which was, so I have 400 people logging in and they can't see me. And my entire presentation is on that thing. But somehow we figured out a way. All I'm saying is, and I think and all that you've said from your experience also here is, put yourself into situations that make you uncomfortable. And that's a sure shot way to growth and to becoming comfortable. You know, volunteer, raise your hand and whenever. What are your thoughts on that, Matt?
Oh, absolutely. So two things come from your story. One is have contingency plans. It's important to think about what could go wrong. Have plans at the ready.
Yeah.
And then second, I have a view on mistakes. I mean, like you, I believe mistakes are opportunities to grow. If we're not making mistakes, we're not growing.
Yeah.
But also, I look at the, you know, when television and movie producers record their movies, they have lots of takes, do it over and over again, not trying to get it perfect, but trying to do it differently. So I look at mistakes really as missed takes. Again, it's an opportunity to take things again. Mm-hmm. And then from those experiences, you might discover something new about yourself, about your connection to the audience. So mistakes are actually just missed takes. Again, another opportunity. You know, movie producers and directors don't get a part the most of it. They can try it again, looking for something different.
I love that reframing of mistakes as mistakes. What a great way to look at it. You know, it's not like you had the the one life or death situation and you failed at it and now it's over. So it's about, it's a mistake, right? It's you just like you guys making TikTok videos or Instagram reels, and you put in so much effort. I've seen young kids in parks and in other places, tourist spots, and they're trying to get that thing right, just right. And if you put the same effort into your public speaking thing, you will definitely improve at it. Without a doubt.
Absolutely. And you actually engage with people in person instead of in recording, for sure.
Sure. I was going to ask, Matt, what role your martial arts practice, your background in martial arts might have played in your excellence in public speaking? Does it help you get more centered? What would you recommend to our viewers? What role it might have played?
Well, one thing for sure, any spiritual practice, meditative practice, I think can help build confidence. This notion of centering, this notion of deep breathing, of calming down, slowing down, can only help. Yeah. The martial arts have been truly instructive in my life. I've learned to get out of my own way. A lot of time, put pressure on ourselves, do it right. Yeah. Unlike public speaking, the martial arts, you get a pretty direct, oftentimes painful result if you're not in the right place at the right time. And so it can be really, really valuable to take time to realize that there are lots of different approaches, that there's no one right way. You know, a lot of us feel in communication that we have to do it right. And I've been doing this for decades. There is no right way to communicate. There are better ways and worse ways, but no right way. And the same is true in the martial arts. Every time you do a move, the situation is different. And the goal is not to do it right. The goal is to be present, to connect with the environment and the people in the situation. And from there, you respond to what's needed. And the same is true in effective communication.
I love what you said. The goal is not about to be right. It's about to be present. And when we're not present, we miss so many opportunities. We miss out opportunities for humor, for interaction, for spontaneity. And yet, you know, in the real world scenario, this is a very big ask for many people, you know, to be centered before public speaking, because somehow, and you've elaborated that in several of your talks, the reasons behind the anxiety, a lot of us find that the fight or flight response gets activated. So instead of being centered in the room, instead of focusing on what's happening in my environment, we are panicking about why we are panicking.
Yes, exactly.
So what would you recommend to our viewers in order to ease their nerves a little bit and to be more present before an important presentation?
I could talk a lot about this, so let me try to be concise. So first and foremost, being anxious before communicating is normal and natural. 85% of people report that they feel nervous in high stakes communication situations, and quite frankly, I think the other 15% are lying. I think we create a situation that makes them nervous too.
Right.
You need to approach managing anxiety, and I use the term managing very specifically. I don't think it's possible to ever overcome anxiety altogether, nor do I think we would want to. Anxiety actually can be helpful when managed appropriately. It gives you energy, it helps you focus, it tells you what you're doing is important. So we need to manage it. And when it comes to managing anxiety, we have to take a two-pronged approach. We have to manage both symptoms and sources.
Right.
Symptoms are what we physiologically experience, and sources are the things that initiate and exacerbate the anxiety. So allow me to just give one bit of advice in each category.
Sure.
Perhaps the most important thing you can do when trying to manage symptoms of anxiety is to take some deep belly breaths, the kind you would take if you're doing some yoga or Tai Chi or Qigong. And what's most critical is not the inhalation, but the exhalation.
Okay.
The rule of thumb, or perhaps, or I should say, the rule of lung, is you want your exhale to be twice as long as your inhale. And if you do this two or three times, you can have this relaxation response activated. That will calm down the rapid heartbeat. It'll slow down your breathing so you won't speak as fast. It'll cool your body down so you won't perspire and blush. It can be very, very useful.
Okay.
Now, in terms of sources, the things that initiate and exacerbate anxiety, there are many. But the one I'll highlight is many of us, when we speak, we have a goal or multiple goals we're trying to achieve.
Right.
Many of us get nervous because we're afraid of not achieving that goal. Mm-hmm. So for my students, they're afraid of not getting a good grade. For the entrepreneurs I coach, afraid of not getting funding. The executives I work with are afraid of not getting support. Right. All of those are potential negative future outcomes. What we're worried about is something in the future. And the way to short-circuit that is to become present-oriented. Mm-hmm. Be in the moment. So do something physical. Walk around the building. Listen to a song or a playlist. That can help you get present. Start at 100 and count backwards by a challenging number like 17. Any of these activities cause you to be present-oriented, which short-circuits that worry about the future. So when it comes to managing anxiety, there are many, many things we can do to address both symptoms and sources. And some of those resources you so kindly shared when you introduced me provide more detail about all of these.
Definitely. And thanks again for that. And I'll highly recommend that you all go check out, because on this, these specific subjects, you have really long videos out there. So there's a lot of content. It's not just like a teaser, 3 or 4 minutes. Some of them are 58 minutes, more than an hour long, on specific subjects that you've created. And you've made it available to public on these social platforms.
Are you saying I'm verbose? Is that what you're saying?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, quite the opposite. I felt there was depth. There was precision in what you were talking about, and yet you were able to cover so many things. And yes, I am going to come to that question about brevity as well a bit later on. But before that, I think it's important to ask there's two sort of questions that I have for you today, man. One is for the advanced category, people who might have some exposure in public speaking, and then they're experiencing some sort of symptoms, as you mentioned, and well, you know, we go a little bit in depth into that. The second I'd like you to ask is just circling back to what I asked earlier about a development plan. You know, so if we've agreed that great communicators are made, they go through learning processes. For somebody who's just starting out, and for someone who's not had a lot of exposure to the world at large, let's say somebody in rural India at this point of time, or somebody who's growing up in another part of the world who probably does not have access to that sort of an environment at the moment in order to practice their public speaking skills, what might be your recommendations to, you know, the first two or three steps, people who are starting out on the journey of becoming more effective? What are the first two or three steps they can take in their development plan that you might recommend?
So let me start by saying a few things. First, there are three areas to initiate any communication that one should focus on. One is confidence, and it's really thinking about what are things I can do to make myself feel more comfortable and confident speaking. And we talked about a few of those techniques. There are many others. The next thing you need to think about is, what is the message I want to communicate? And in order to figure out that message, you really need to think about the audience you're speaking to and what is it that's the value you can bring to them. So it always starts with your audience. Once you understand your audience, you have to think about, what goal do I have given what my audience needs? And a goal to me has three parts. It's about information, emotion, and action. What do I want my audience to know? How do I want them to feel? And what do I want them to do? Okay. So we start with confidence, we focus on our audience and create a goal, and from there we need to then deliver our message through our nonverbal presence, what we do with our bodies and our voices. So we can leverage recordings if we have access to that kind of technology and look at what we look like compared to other people we respect. Sure. Certainly taking advantage of books, videos, coaches, classes. There's a wonderful international organization called Toastmasters, which is designed to help people develop skills. So really putting yourself on that path, starting with confidence, thinking about your audience and content, then your delivery, and then making yourself available of resources, coaches, materials that can help. That's how we get better. It is a continual journey. There is no end to this. We can all continue to hone and develop our communication skills.
Definitely. And that's really helpful. And I think, as you rightly said, it's a journey. It's a process. A lot of young people are looking for shortcuts to this. I think going by what you just said, I don't think they exist. You can maybe fast track your learning and development process, but there is no shortcut.
I liken it again to learning music or learning a sport. There's no short way to become really good at a sport, and there's no shortcut to becoming really good at music. You can spend extra time. You can certainly practice and find good mentors and others to work with, but it takes time. And as we spoke about earlier, it takes an openness to making mistakes, to pushing and challenging ourselves, and having the patience and the giving ourselves permission and giving ourselves a little bit of a break as we learn. And in doing so can ultimately reward you with great communication skills and great connection with other people.
Definitely, it'll set you apart. You know, I think among a cohort of people, if you have similar sort of skills.
Right. One thing to point out is the pandemic taught all of us that communication is critical. And coming out of the pandemic, what we're seeing in a tremendous number of research studies looking at what are the skills employers need for success, communication is at the top of that list. And so taking the time to develop your communication skills in many instances is actually more important than the domain expertise you bring. Employers are much more interested in your ability to communicate what you know, and they can help you learn your content of the domain expertise. It's really hard to teach somebody communication skills.
And yet it's vital for business success. I think one of these studies that came out of Harvard was about the 9 symptoms of corporate decline. Professor Rosabeth Moscanter, she published the 9 symptoms of corporate decline. Number one on the list was the breakdown of internal communication. And I know that has a lot to do with trust issues or the sort of culture that prevails, but it also has a lot to do with individuals willing to speak up, individuals willing to present their ideas, and that drives innovation, that drives so many other things. You could have a bunch of brilliant people that you're working with, but if they don't speak up and share their ideas, if they don't make themselves vulnerable, put themselves in that spot where they're okay to share their crazy sounding next big idea, we won't have innovation. We won't have those big breakthroughs.
You bet. Every model of innovation I know involves some aspect of communication, of vulnerability, of risk, and all founded on being psychologically safe and comfortable to do that. And this doesn't even begin to address the value of communication in our personal lives. It's not just our professional life, personal lives as well. The ability to communicate and listen and collaborate are critical.
Yep, huge. In fact, we had some roadworks going on in where I live. You know, they were laying out this concrete new road, and you know, so some of the areas were shut down. Some issues among the neighbors regarding parking and movement, etc., as well as visitors to the area. What I observed during those 15 days was a lot of human behavior at display, especially under a major change, going through a major transformation. And what I sensed was that how simple things can escalate into big conflicts just due to communication gone wrong, and just because people would overreact or not listen, or you know, short temper, lack of patience, etc., etc. Small thing could snowball into a police complaint, or you know, it could become that big if not resolved with some degree of empathy or listening and all those basic things that we talk about.
Absolutely, and that's the secret of good communication. It's not just what you say; it's how you listen as well. And your example is a great one. Though that happens on many levels in many different situations. And in your case, it was a literal roadblock, but in many situations, it's a metaphorical roadblock.
Yeah.
And communication is the way to avoid that and to work through that.
Absolutely, I'm reminded of a quote by Jim Rohn, the late Jim Rohn, who said this. He said, attack the problem, not the person. And I think that's one of the best pieces of interpersonal advice I've had in over last couple of decades. We end up attacking the person, not the problem. But if you're able to isolate that and attack the problem, not the person, you have a solution, and B, you have a person who's not been attacked, who's not looking for revenge now.
Right. And yeah, I think you said it exactly right there, that conflict and feedback can all be envisioned as problems to be solved. And when you solve a problem collaboratively, not only is it easier, but it ends up being likely to be better adopted and supported in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to You talked about martial arts and music practice and so many things. All of these things require mastery and they require a lot of practice. And I was going to ask you about the role of preparation for, especially for beginners, Matt. What's the ideal level? I mean, I've seen some kids before they go on stage for a debate or you know, or a speech, and they're backstage and just memorizing their opening lines as well, pacing up and down. What's the ideal sort of preparation, especially for beginners? Is there something, we all know you could be underprepared, but could there be something as overprepared? And what would your thoughts be on that subject?
Yeah, so finding that sweet spot is really difficult. I have a rule of thumb that you, when between the time you get assigned or learn of your communication event and the time you have to deliver, cut it right in half.
Okay.
The first half is where you spend your time preparing the content, thinking about your audience, structuring an outline. And then the second half is where you spend time practicing the material. Maybe if you're going to have slides or other additional things like a demonstration that you're doing, that comes in the second half. Often we spend so much time working on our content, there's no time dedicated to actually delivering and practicing.
Right. Right.
So we need to take the time to do both. Now, how much do you actually do in the planning phase? Do you write down every word for word and do you memorize? I'm not a fan of memorization. If you need to create a script to make sure that it's logical, to make sure if you're not comfortable perhaps with the language you're speaking in to get the words right, absolutely fine to do. But from that, create an outline and then practice from the outline. We know from research in neuroscience that when you memorize something, you actually make it harder on yourself to deliver.
Interesting.
There's this theory in cognitive psychology called cognitive load theory. Think of your brain and computer. There's only so much processing power. And part of that is dedicated to monitoring and managing, am I hitting the right words? Am I hitting the script? That means you have less bandwidth to focus on actually what you're saying.
Okay.
And so it is far better to have a few bullet points or ideas that you want to get across, and then allow yourself the freedom to speak them in a way that feels more natural and in the moment. Now, that doesn't mean we don't practice. This is important. Going through it is important. But memorizing is a much different beast. I'll let you in on a little secret. Here's what I do. I might draft things out pretty specifically. Not a full script, but pretty close. I then, from that script, create an outline. And then I go one step further. I create questions that will stimulate in my mind answers that touch the topics of my outline. So when I lecture, when I give a keynote, I am simply answering unasked questions of my audience. And what this does for me is several things. One, it puts me in service of my audience.
Sure.
I am there for them answering their unasked questions. Two, I happen to know the answer to all these questions. So it gives me a sense of confidence. And three, it makes my tone very conversational, which we know is better for audiences. They like to listen better to conversational messages and they remember them more. So take it, for some of you who are looking for a way to not memorize, create an outline, and from that outline create a series of questions that you just answer. And some people might be, that sounds okay, but how am I going to remember the questions? If you're using slides, have those slide titles the questions you're going to answer.
No, that's a great way to go about it. And what really personally I could relate to was what you mentioned about the memory overload. And sometimes I think speakers, we are especially guilty of that. I don't know who said this, but I read this somewhere. We treat our PowerPoint slides like our kids, you know, even if they're ugly, we love them. We love them so much. We feel like religiously we have to go through every single slide that we originally created. And I think that puts more pressure on us in terms of...
It absolutely puts more pressure for sure. And it restricts the possibility of what could happen. If I'm simply focused on getting through my slides, by definition, I am missing what's happening in the moment that I could adjust and adapt to. I have seen speakers who are going to get through the beginning to the end of their slide deck come hell or high water, regardless of what happens in front of them, regardless of people are sleeping or confused.
Yep.
And that misses the point of communication. So we really need to decouple the experience of presenting from our slide deck and from our idea of getting through our script.
Okay, great. And which is leading me to another question that was just emerging in my mind is about in your career as a keynote speaker and a public speaking consultant and teacher and subject matter expert, if you were to pick maybe the top one or two mistakes that most speakers are guilty of, with an intention that we should all avoid them, that's one. Let's go with that first, and then I'll ask you the other one about what are the two things that we get right that we should be doing. But let's go with the top two mistakes that you feel all speakers are guilty of at some times, and we should avoid that.
Well, I hinted at one already. Mm-hmm. Our job as communicator is to be in service of our audience. And what the fundamental mistake most people make is they focus on what they want to say. So as a speaker, I focus on what I want to say. And that's exactly the wrong place to start. Mm-hmm. You should be focused on what does my audience need to hear. So it's not about what I want, it's about what they need. Okay. So you need to really reflect on your audience. And there are four key things I believe we should always focus on. One is, what does the audience know relative to our topic? We have all been through meetings and presentations where somebody starts too high level or too low level.
Sure.
Target their knowledge. Mm-hmm. Second, what are their attitudes? Are they in favor or against what we're saying? You should craft different content for a favorable audience versus an unfavorable.
Right.
Third, and perhaps important, is what is the area of resistance? What are the hesitations that they have? Mm-hmm. If you don't acknowledge them, then you're talking to a brick wall potentially.
Absolutely.
And then finally, what motivates your audience? Is there a way that you can tap into what motivates them? So the first mistake people make is they don't think about their audience. They only selfishly think about what is it I want to get across. Mm-hmm. And then second, this is much more tactical. Mm-hmm. I am on a personal message, Simmer, and if you can help me spread this word, I am on a personal mission to stop presentations and meetings from starting like this. Hi. My name is, and today I'm going to talk about. That is boring, that is banal, and often silly because you're presenting in front of a slide that says your name and says your title.
Mm-hmm.
I believe all presentations and meetings should start like action movies.
Right.
In an action movie, how does it start? Mm-hmm. With action, and then you see the title and credits.
Right, right.
And that's how we can start our meetings and presentations. So those to me are the two big mistakes people make.
I love that. I actually joke with we created a video on helping youngsters do better at interviews, and some of them wrote memorize the answers of tell us about yourself, etc., etc., and they go off like a cassette player. My name is so and so. I'm studying this subject. So probably the interviewer already knows all this information because she has your CV in front of her, and so you're just like repeating just because you learned all those things. You have to go through them. So it's the ability to be dynamic, to be in that situation, to figure out what's still relevant, and some cases might be relevant, to maybe go through a short introduction about yourself. If the MC's done a miserable job at that, you might want to go through some of those things again. But in most of the cases, it's for your ability to think fast and figure out what can you eliminate at this point of time. No, thank you.
That's, I almost thought you were going to say think fast, talk smart, which is what I'm all about. But
absolutely.
You look way too young. You look way too young to know what a cassette player is.
Maybe the grays you can notice on the sides. So, but I've been through my share of, using that little pencil to sometimes the cassette gets stuck, and using that little pencil to make sure it can go in properly. And that is a different. Sorry.
Oh, a different generation. I talked to my kids about, they listen to mixtapes, but they have no idea what a mixtape was. I remember pushing the record and the pause at the same time to
make
the copies.
To create that mixtape, right, absolutely. And even my dad used to have one of those vinyl sort of record players as well back in the day. And interesting, how much you had to care for all these things. And now everything is on demand. And I like that. I'm all for it. I'm all for human beings making all this progress. But I think, guys, it's important for everybody to understand there is no app available for self-development that you can download. You cannot download better attitude. You cannot download better communication skills. These are things you'll just have to clean and polish and look after them, just like back in the day we used to look after all of our gadgets to make sure they work really well. It's been a fascinating discussion here today, Matt. Thank you so much for freely sharing your wisdom. We've talked about what beginners should do. I had one very important question for what people who might have some exposure to public speaking. The situation is this. The person has prepared for his or her speech. They've done their bit, and they're now sitting, perhaps sitting in the audience or sitting backstage waiting for their turn. They had a different image of what the conference room or auditorium might look like, and perhaps also a different image of how many people are going to be present. So when they started, they were like maybe 50, 60 odd people, but now the room's filling up fast, and the speaker before you is doing a great job at engaging the audience, and all of a sudden this waiting period is taking a toll on your centeredness, you know, when you're being in the moment. So you, all of your thoughts are suddenly racing towards, you know, maybe a comparison, maybe what could go wrong, or maybe, you know, please, can you share from your experience how to tackle with this, maybe this waiting period before people go on stage, that dreaded 30, 40, 50 minutes before your name is called, because that can be a really challenging time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it's not just when you're waiting behind the curtains in the green room waiting to go on. It's when you're sitting in a meeting, and you see on the agenda that your name is third or fourth, and you're listening to the first, second, and third person going ahead of you. So a few thoughts on that. First and foremost, as I mentioned earlier, getting present oriented. So what can you do in that moment to get present oriented? Well, if you're a subsequent speaker, pay close attention to what the person is saying. So you're ignoring what you might be feeling and the anxiety that's coming, and really pay attention with the goal to understand what the other speaker is saying and looking for connection to what they're saying, to what you're saying. So when you speak, you can refer to that other person, and that present-oriented nature will take away some of that pressure.
Okay.
Second, I would recommend reminding yourself that you are there because you have value to bring. Your name is on the agenda. You're part of the speaking lineup. You have value. And when you remind yourself that, hey, I'm going to bring value to this situation, that actually invites confidence and can cancel out some of that negativity that we're dealing with. And then finally, replace that mental recording that's playing negative thoughts with positive. Create a positive affirmation, a mantra that reminds you that you know your stuff. You know, professional athletes, before they putt golf or hit at cricket or in baseball, they'll say something positive like, I've got this, I know how to do this, or calm. Those positive minds will cancel out the negative thoughts. So those are three things you can do. Focus exclusively on what's being said and look for connections. Make sure that you remind yourself there's value you bring, and then have a mantra that cancel out some of those negative thoughts.
Those are great points. Great points. And I think, if I may add, is that we must actively work on our tendency to ensure that we are being authentic to who we are, because you don't have to mimic the style or of the person before you. You know, you are you. You know, and your own unique proposition based on how you deliver, it does not have to be the same. So if somebody's got maybe half stand-up comedy and half inspirational talk, and you don't feel that you're the person to do that, you don't have to put that pressure on yourself to be that person and go with your own style and believe in yourself. And I think that's really important. Thoughts on visualization, Matt? Have you used it as a tool? Would you recommend it? And how should one go about it?
Absolutely. One of the longest studied techniques for managing anxiety involves visualization. The research has been done for almost 50 years now. Okay. So seeing in your mind's eye the speaking that you intend to do, the people in the room itself, reflecting on that before you actually show up, allows you in many ways to be like a flight simulator. It's a way of practicing. So when you actually show up, it's not the first time. You've seen it in your mind's eye, and it absolutely help you calm down. And the cool thing is, there are apps that can help you. There's a wonderful app called Virtual Speech, which allows you to put on goggles, virtual goggles, VR headset, and you can see an audience made up of avatars, and you can practice in front of it. It's a way of desensitizing yourself, both doing it on when you close your eyes or putting on VR goggles to do it. So visualization is a very powerful tool for desensitizing you to the real event. So I'm a big fan of it. I coach people to do it. I teach people. And I think as one of many practices to build confidence is through visualization.
Great. What's that app called again, please?
It's called Virtual Speech.
Virtual Speech. Okay, great. We'll share the link in the description below, as well as links to Matt's website and his YouTube channel and other useful resources out there. We are, I think, virtual reality is taking this whole visualization game to the next level, you know, in helping people overcome their fears. I tried recently one, you know, walking on this wooden plank, and it takes you high up you feel like you're going on a high rise, and there's this wooden plank in front of you, and you have to step on it, and there's a little kitten sitting on the other side, and you have to save it and bring it back. And it's so funny because my daughters made a little video of me trying to walk on this little artificial plank in the room with nothing, and they're like, "Dad, why are you so scared?" I said, "Well, you don't know what's going on here," and you know, with these VR headset on.
Well, and the nice thing about the VR headset is you can take it off. The problem with many of us is we carry those images around, and that's where we have to work on with all these tools we've talked about.
Absolutely.
So we can turn some of that off. But there are wonderful tools to help people. The virtual speech is a good one. Another one I recommend is called Poised, POISED.com. That's one that gives you feedback on your nonverbal presence.
All right.
How fluent are you? What kind of variation do you have in your voice? Do you use lots of filler words? Tools like that can be very instructive. So you're not on your own. There are a whole bunch of application and tools, as well as books and videos, coaches and teachers who are there to support you as you develop your communication skills. Often we feel like we're the only one who's not good at communication. Reality is most people could benefit from working on their communication.
Definitely. And I think the message is loud and clear that the inner work must happen before we experience the outer results. The inner work, whether it's visualization, preparation, refining your message, knowing your audience, we've got to invest that time. I'm reminded of a quote by Muhammad Ali who said, "The fight is won or lost long before I dance beneath those lights." So which means he's done his preparation beforehand, and I think as a public speaker as well, you need to ensure that we're putting in the inner work before we expect the outer results. Matt, thank you so much for this, all the wisdom that you've shared with us today.
Thank you so much, Simrajit. The work you do is so important, and I love that you are bringing communication advice to so many. Thank you for that.
Absolute pleasure. Before we let you go, would you like to say any parting words of wisdom for our young viewers across the world?
Absolutely. You all have voices that we need to hear. We need to hear from diverse experiences, from the passions and ideas that you have. And the single best thing you can do to help make sure that your voices are heard and your ideas are shared is to work on your communication. And to do so means giving yourself permission, taking risks, learning from your mistakes, and really taking the time to commit to becoming better at your communication. Know that there are many people out there who are willing to help. It just takes you're being willing to seek those people out and really work on it for yourself.
Wonderful. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was Professor Matt Abrahams from Stanford University. Once again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.